It's a good morning and welcome to the Vale of Praise right here on the Adventist World Radio. We have been talking over the past 2 to 3 weeks. We have been talking about the scourge or the challenge of a pornography. And we've kind of been talking about it in the third party or talking about it theoretically and a bit of the practical. Today, we want to talk about steps of overcoming. How does the individual overcome? There's elements like maintaining, there's elements like relapse. We want to look at those things. And if one comes across those things, how do they overcome these kind of challenges? And on the line, once again, we've got Arthur Spandau, who's written a lot of articles around this challenge. And he's also one of the founders of a movement called Love, a Truth and Freedom Movement. Very helpful, very insightful posts that they have on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. And if you go in there, there's so much that you can gather. And they've got a WhatsApp line dedicated to helping those that are suffering or who are facing the challenge of pornography. And maybe today we'll ask him to share how one can access that WhatsApp line and what are the terms and conditions of being part and parcel of that, joining that WhatsApp line. First things first, like we do it in the African way. Good morning to you, Arthur.
Good morning, Tam. Thank you very much for having me on your show. Good morning to all the listeners.
Thank you very much. It's been quite challenging. You know, when we were talking one of these days, you said to me, you know, talking about porn at sometimes makes you feel like the world is judging you. And so last week, as I was replaying what we were talking about, you know, I kind of got to a point where I was like, yo, bazothini. Then I remembered who I am. I'm a radio presenter. So either way, people will talk about me. They will talk about things that I talk about. But it's quite insightful. It's quite eye-opening. It's made me think about a lot of things in terms of what one does when you're invited from place to place to talk about these things. And I just want to say thank you very much, Arthur, for opening up our eyes in such a powerful way.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So let's talk about the individual. We've spoken about the support structure. But before we do that, I just want to read a verse from the book of Proverbs, chapter 28, verse 13. And I think you alluded to this verse. It says, people who conceal their sins will not prosper. But if they confess them, confess and turn from them, they will receive mercy. And I think the one thing that you alluded to was that the more you hide this thing, the more it eats you up.
I definitely, well, it's the Bible. I do agree with everything that the Bible says. So I maybe before I even say anything, I want to maybe admit to the listeners that Love, Truth and Freedom Movement is not a health or professional organization. We are mi mindful to advise people that we are not giving professional advice, but we are merely Christians, and some of us are sharing maybe the journeys that we've gone in our personal lives and how we have experienced the grace of God in restoring our lives. So it means then, whatever comments I make, people still need to make their own judgment as to whether it's helpful for them or not. So, going back to the issue of secrecy and how it promotes or perpetuates addiction, definitely, when you are struggling with something that you consider shameful, something that you consider unacceptable, something that violates your moral standards. And for most of us who are Adventists, and I think I would say for most of us who are Adventists or conservative, or let me just broaden it to say conservative, or sometimes referred to fundamental Christians, we hold certain tenets or certain standards, and
Yeah.
there's nothing wrong with holding standards. But I think
Yes.
sometimes the challenge is not being aware of the reality of the nature of sin and the struggle with sin, and is also not being aware of the nature of God and his role in restoring us. So sometimes we're so much for standards to a point that when we then fall into a mess, it's difficult for us to think we can approach a fellow brother or a fellow sister to tell them we are stuck because we believe they are going to judge us and be mean to us and condemn us in this very same manner in which we had been condemning other people who had fallen into other sins. So the same manner in which I feel about people that I consider sinful, I'm likely to judge myself in this in that particular light when I mess up or fall into a wayside sin. So people are afraid to seek for help. They are ashamed of what they are doing. They are violating their own moral standards, and they try to break free from those issues alone, which unfortunately doesn't work. But then the scripture is saying, whoever exposes his
Conceals.
sin, yeah, whoever conceals, they will not find mercy. They will not get solution to their problem. But the one who opens up and seeks for help, they're going to find restoration. So that is very practical and that is very real. So addiction circles, people expects encourage people to bring out their wounds into the light of a environment that is healing, accepting, and restorative.
And actually, when I was reading up on this conversation as I was preparing, I think I when I went through various articles, the one thing that was a common theme in on overcoming was this: first, you must acknowledge that you have the addiction. Why is it important to admit that you have got the addiction and it exists?
I think when someone reaches a point of admitting, they are open to help. Not only are they open to help, maybe they also recognize that they've failed to deal with the situation. So maybe as a reminder, the technical definition that we're using of addiction is we're saying it you are a person that finds that you have lost control over your behavior and you have made several attempts of changing that behavior, but you are failing and you are finding that you are going back, whether it's to porn, whether it's to sex, whether it is to some in some cases, even masturbation, for example, where someone is compulsively doing it, where they can't go a day or whatever without resorting to it. So it's a person that looks at their life and say, this thing is now is taking over my life. So that's what we call an addiction. So it doesn't mean every person that watches porn is addicted. So let's be clear on that.
I need you to clarify that.
So there's people that occasionally watch stuff. So this discussion right now, currently, I'm not saying that is right. I'm saying as Christians, we will still believe that is wrong because Jesus has said whoever looks at a woman lustfully has already committed sin in his heart with the woman. But so I'm saying some people you watch porn occasionally, and some people maybe masturbate occasionally. So it's not an addiction if it is not taking over your life. If it's something that happens once in a while, I'm not saying it's right. You as a Christian need to make that conscious decision of the morality of what you are doing. But then when it's an addiction, it's something that is that is now frequent, something that is now taking over your life. So I'm talking about someone that spends hours online watching stuff. I'm talking about someone that spends the whole night, like they know that daily in the evening, I wait for people to sleep, and then I reduce the volume, I do whatever, I start watching stuff. And you find that when you start watching, suddenly you've spent 2, 3 hours, whatever amount of hours, watching stuff. And secondly, you are always looking forward to the next time which you're going to watch. Like you're always thinking about when am I going to get another chance to watch it. And thirdly, it is disrupting your normal day-to-day life. There's people who are students, we have got exams that are due, assignments that are due, and someone finds that instead of them reading and preparing for the exam, for some reason they are on a porn website. Definitely in that situation, this thing has taken over your life, and maybe you had chores or duties that you were supposed to do at home. You were supposed to, I can't give you examples, but there's something important that you were supposed to do, which your wife, your husband, thought you were going to do. But because you were just, you were home on an off day, and you were supposed to go shopping. You had promised to go shopping, but you were on the laptop watching movies. Then you wandered into a porn site before you knew it. It's evening, and you didn't go and do that shopping. So there are people in such circumstances where their lives are being affected by their sexual behavior. Some even it has gone to a point where their sexual life has been affected. They cannot be sexually aroused unless they watch porn. They cannot perform sexually. I think it's called porn-induced erectile dysfunction. They can't be get, and probably I'm talking about men. They cannot get an erection because of that, because their mind can only be stimulated by porn. So they would need to imagine themselves doing the stuff that is on the website for them to be able to perform physically with their spouse. So maybe it's women who are no longer satisfied with their husband because it's not like what she's seen on online, and it's not satisfying as what the person has seen. So you need to even think up, imagine the porn for you to pay. If it has gotten to that pro to that to that situation, then it's out of control. Sometimes you are irritable. Sometimes just so touchy. There's always fights. The spouse is thinking you're cheating, and maybe you have even started cheating. So the life is out of control. So you spoke about the first step being to admit. So most people who start their porn recovery journey, they usually do so when they've reached rock bottom. Rock bottom is where we describe someone that comes to a point where their life is so much in a mess, where they can't deny that their life is in a
In
mess.
a mess.
Yes, you were caught at work, watching porn. I've listened to stories of people who maybe sometimes, the manager had to make it a formal discussion to find out why is it that our internet or whatever is just finishing. Those who are not on unlimited Wi-Fi, whatever, it's someone is downloading huge files. What is happening? Yes.
I did see that in one workplace.
Yes. So until it becomes a discussion, or maybe if that place they've got software that monitors what people download or where they visit, maybe it comes to a point where you are caught red-handed. You are watching porn. You're watching porn at work. You have been caught. That's rock bottom. You can even be a pastor. I'm not getting maybe a go at pastors, but I'm describing situations that happen where maybe someone related how maybe when a pastor was relocating from one church to another, and it is then when the pastor had relocated that those who remained when they were looking at the desktop which the pastor was using in his office, that on the search history they found a lot of on websites and whatever. So it's when you are caught where you can't deny, and maybe when your wife is saying, "I'm leaving you. If you are not changing, I'm leaving." That's rock bottom. And that's where people are more willing to seek for help. So it's dangerous then to try to offer help to people who have not reached rock bottom.
Right.
Number one, it's also dangerous to try to seek to help people who don't see it as a problem.
That was going to be my second point to say the common thread that I've come across also is that you must recognize that what you're doing is wrong. And the reason is that addicts find a way to justify their problem in their mind. And the Bible says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And that's 1 John chapter 2, verses 16. So, and I just want to tie it up to what you were just about to say. You must recognize that what you're doing is wrong.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So, I'm not going to come here and try to squeeze confessions from people. It's a personal decision which all of us need to make. To say, am I benefiting something from watching porn, or am I benefiting anything from sleeping around or from doing whatever you're doing? So it's a call that all of us have to make. It's a personal decision. So it wouldn't help anyone at all to try to convict someone, enforce a conviction on someone that they shouldn't be watching porn when they don't see a problem with it. I didn't want to borrow from a medical point of view. In the medical field, people don't force people to start maybe a therapy which they
You're
feel
right.
that they don't need. It is the person who has to come to a point where they say, I need help. Because it will be useless to even attempt to bring solutions to someone who is not open to help. There's a Zulu hymn. I don't know now how to translate it back into English, but there's a song that says Nihlambulule.
Yeah, wash me.
Yes, noma ngomlilo
Even with
ngiyavuma.
fire,
Yes,
I will
so
agree.
yes, so 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 someone who has come to a point where he is not choosing the method of cleansing. Someone who is not so much caring about, oh, my privacy, no, people will know, or whatever. No, if your house is burning on fire, you do not care about the pictures on the wall that they are not aligned well, and you're busy trying to fix the pictures on the wall when the whole house is collapsing. There's no point. If your whole house is on fire, the old only thing you care about is to get out of that house before it is burnt down. So it has to be a conviction that no, my life is a mess. No, this is not wholesome. No, my spiritual life is deteriorating, and my work life is deteriorating. My relationships with my wife, with my family is deteriorating. This thing is taking center stage in my life. A lot of people would know that after you've watched something online, you usually can't immediately pray. If we're honest, you can't be in a space where you are saying, let me read about John the Revelator after you've been watching unwholesome stuff. So it's that realization that this thing is damaging the mind. It is changing your character. You are becoming a new person. You are becoming a different individual altogether. So if you are not happy with where your life is going because of what you are watching or doing, then it's time to say, I need help. And at that time, you don't care to what extent the help will demand you to, or what interventions you need to do. You are open to everything, and you will not care about, no, my privacy, because you know your house is burning and your house is on fire. So those are the people that are open to help, because they don't care about who says what, because they are only looking at their safety, they are only looking at their salvation, and that's what they care about. Yeah, so that's what is important. That's a personal journey. Maybe that's my emphasis. It's you who needs to recognize that your house is burning and you need help.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Arthur Sibanda, one of the founders of Love, Truth and Freedom Movement, and we're talking about overcoming pornography. And we've been doing this as a series, and we've had it over the past 3 weeks. This is the third week, I want to believe. And if you've got a comment, you can send it through to +27734703520. So Arthur, we've touched on the element that first, you must acknowledge addiction. Secondly, we've touched on the aspect that you must recognize that what you're doing is wrong. And the other element is that not blaming others for what you are going through. Adam in the Garden of Eden, when God asks him, "Who told you that you are naked?" He then says, "Lord, it's this woman that you gave me." He's actually, in actual fact, is blaming God, number one, for giving him the woman. Nankosi, I didn't need this woman. You gave me this woman. Then he blames Eve. It's Eve. So the element of some people saying, no, these women are seductive, or these men are just, dark chocolate. They've got six packs. This is why I'm where I am. So the element of not blaming others, but being accountable for your own actions.
It definitely. You cannot blame anyone. You need to take ownership of your struggle. You need to accept that it is you who is corrupted. It is you that needs help. And then, of course, when you have accepted that you need help, that's when maybe you need to take further steps. If you are lucky to find counselors, that would be good. If you are lucky to have maybe pastors or elders who have an understanding of addiction recovery, you are so lucky if in that situation to go to them to seek for counseling. If you are in places where there's programs that are available where addictions are addressed, you are lucky. But of course, there's a lot of resources online. Covenant Eyes. He has a very good website with a lot of resources where you can read to understand yourself, to understand why you struggle with porn, and understand why porn is addictive. You need to also understand the science behind why it is luring, because when you understand why, sometimes you can appreciate what you need to do to avoid stuff. And definitely, I'm also going to talk about you need to make some decisions. Jesus, somewhere, fortunately, I didn't note the verse down where he says, if your eye is causing you to sin, black it out. You'd rather lose an eye than lose your whole salvation. And he says, if your hand is causing you to sin, cut it out. So the message was not meaning people should literally black out their eyes or cut off their hands, because historically, there's no Christians in early Christianity, early Christian period, who had missing limbs or missing eyes because they'd taken the message literally. But it essentially meant that you need to be resolutely committed to do the hardest thing to break free from the addiction. Some of it may include dropping off friends, because some of us have got friends that are sending us stuff on our WhatsApp platforms. Some of it may include exiting certain WhatsApp groups where stuff is being posted. Some of it may include leaving certain Facebook pages. Some of it may include totally disconnecting from social media in some cases. For some people, that's what works for them. And sometimes it may mean deleting the storage that is on our phone, that is on our laptops. It may also mean installing Covenant Eyes. I'm not, by the way, I'm not advertising, but they have an excellent software which you can use to block stuff. Block your access to certain websites, as well as sending reports to your accountability partners in case you access the forbidden websites. And you may also need to open up to a trusted person that you are asking to be your accountability partner, and this person is checking on you regularly, maybe every week, just to make sure that you are on track and you are not going back to defaulting back to your previous behaviors. So those are the additional steps that someone takes after admitting, and then they take those additional steps. Of course, there's prayer, there's fasting, and you notice that I purposely didn't mention them first, because I found that with sexual addiction recovery, for some reason, you don't always experience a miracle of immediate recovery. And my explanation was in Galatians, and I mentioned that verse last time, and I didn't bring it again today. But I know it's in Galatians. Paul says, "God is not mocked. Whatsoever you sow, you will
You will
reap.
reap.
Yes, if you sow in the in your physical flesh, you will reap more. You will reap the consequences of your behavior. So that's a natural law, a natural principle. So if you are damaging your mind by watching stuff daily, God can perform a miracle, yes, but he is not obligated to, because it is a result of my own choosing. So sometimes it will take longer for me, for you, for whoever to be restored because of years of being damaged, of damaging the neural pathways, the neural circuits of the brain. So it's our own doing. So we can't skip the process. Recovery is a painful process. It is not a pain-free endeavor. It includes a lot of pain.
Can I just come there, and I want us to take a step back. Now we are saying you've got to admit to that you are doing something wrong, and you must not blame others. And I just want to say, how do you prepare those that matter to you, those that you love, for what you are just about to divulge to them? Or how do you even discuss? How do you get to a point where you now say, "Ish, let's assume you are married. You're now saying to your wife or to your husband, 'Yo, I've got this problem.'" Because our reactions and responses may not just be the same.
You are asking a very important question. I think it will always depend on each and every circumstance. Yes, it will depend on each and every circumstance. But so your question is about how does one prepare to do that? And I think for the longest of time, I have been trying to show fellow Christians that we are doing ourselves harm by not engaging in this conversation about addictions and struggles. And because we've never come to an understanding about how difficult these struggles are, it means maybe I'm a difficult person for you to talk to, because I'm judgmental, I am all those negative characteristics. I'm one person that is probably going to preach about you next Sabbath. You say, "Oh, my dear brothers and sisters, the devil is at work. The devil is really working." Last week, I had a brother coming to confess
Yo,
to me.
yo,
You can never imagine what the devil is doing to our elders. So
yo.
that's the kind of people that we are. So I am hoping someone, even before porn addiction, honestly, I'm hoping all of us as Christians are developing very good Christian relationships, very good Christian friends, who become accountability partners, not because of porn or sexual struggles, but because of life in general. Someone who is your safeguard, someone who is your obstacle standing in the way from letting you go to mess around or to mess up yourself. You need someone who calls out your behavior to say, no, my brother, you can't treat your wife that way. I'm your friend, but you can't. I can't allow you to do that.
So I just quickly want to come in there. So you are saying us discussing this matter equips and empowers us to probably be ready, or I don't know which term to use, to say when somebody close to us then comes and says, I've got this problem, rather than react and respond in a negative way, we respond in a helpful way.
Yes. I think all I have been trying to do in ministry is to help people to own the problem. We are not talking about a problem which is out there. We are talking about a problem which is amongst us. So like I said, maybe there's some of us who are addicted, as in we've lost control of our lives. But there's very few people who can stand up and say they've not seen any porn or nudity at all, total. So I'm trying to show that it's everyone's problem. So we need to own it and start talking about it as something that affects every person. Every person. Very quickly, there was a study somewhere, unfortunately, something that's just coming in my mind, so I'll not give specific references. There was someone that was trying to look at how porn affects people, in how they recover from it. Yeah, something like that. So they needed a sample of people on which they were going to study. So they were supposed to have a sample of, excuse me, a sample of people that are saying they are struggling with porn on one hand, and they were supposed to have a control group to compare with those who are struggling. A control group was supposed to be people who have never struggled with porn. And do you know what happened? That research could not go ahead as was planned because there was no control group. There was no one who could say, I've never, 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 yes, I've never seen it. What are you talking about? What's porn? There's no people like that. So that's how. So they had to readjust the study, and maybe to say maybe those were really addicted, and those maybe were exposed as a control group. So I'm mentioning all these things to say this is a real issue. We are just doing ourselves a disservice if we're not owning it, if we're not normalizing the conversations about our sexual struggles, conversations about our sexuality, the gift of sex itself, and how God fits into the picture. Because in the previous episodes of our discussions, I said that sex is a gift from God, and it is God that taught Adam how to do it. That's what I said. So we need to bring that to the table to not to normalize it in a respectful way, yes. In a way that has dignity, yes. In a way that is not triggering or seductive or suggestive, yes. This is a beautiful thing. We can talk about it and still pray afterwards. If we've done it well, we still feel okay. I don't feel I was leading anyone into sin. I don't feel like I was being led into sin. It was healthy. It's beautiful. After the discussion, I feel like no. If I'm single, not married, I'm looking forward to the blessing of God in marriage when I will enjoy the beautiful gift that He has given humanity. If I'm married, I'm saying I want God to help me to keep the marriage bed undefiled. I think that's James now who talks about the marriage bed being undefiled. So we need to bring this to the table. So now when it's a normal conversation, if I come to you and say, "No, my brother, I have such and such an issue," you are not shocked. You are not shocked to say, "Where is this coming from?" Because you know this is normal part of anatomy and physiology. My body responds in certain ways. If I watch certain stuff or if I do certain things, you understand all that. So your response maybe will be saying, "How can I help you? How can I?" So that's the understanding I've wished for the longest of time that maybe the church would embrace, because it's biblical. It's biblical. We need, yeah, we need to embrace it.
And now, so you once one has begun the process of admitting, some researchers, especially those that are Christian inclined, they say that you must recognize that willpower is not the answer, because they say at a weak moment your will may fail you, but they say by admitting that you are in need of God's help, you open access to supernatural intervention in your life. Let's talk about that, the issue of willpower, because there's also the element of relapse where people say, no, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, and it's, for example, Jesus says to Peter, Peter, you will deny me, and Peter says, no, not me, not me, and it's on record, Peter denied Jesus. The willpower was there, the flesh was willing, but the spirit, so things just did not. Let's talk about this issue of willpower.
Yes, I think the most unfortunate thing about our biology, at least from a theological perspective, is that our biology is inclined towards doing evil. In Ellen White's time, there was a common phrase that was popular, which maybe she would use when you talk about the base nature, or maybe sometimes you would say animalism. Because when we are defaulting to our base or sinful nature, we behave like any other animal in the animal kingdom. So the difference between humans, biologically speaking, and yes, biologically speaking, I hope the theologians will not crucify me there. But I'm talking about the human brain, and versus other animals. Scientists also talk about the animal brain, when we have these discussions. So essentially, they are saying there's part of the brain which is the simplest structure that is akin to every living biological being. Which usually is just so concerned about survival, about eating, about drinking, about fighting, about reproduction. Those are natural instincts that we default to. So you if you look at biology, I mean biological species, that's what they do. They just eat, drink, breed. That's life for them. And we could go a step further to say, if you look at and they are not moral. They don't have higher cortical structures like the higher brain, where there's reasoning, there's morals, they don't have all that. So if it's breeding season, you know what happens in nature. All when the females are on heat, every male, doesn't matter whether it's the brother or the sister or it's the mother or whatever. I'm trying to make a point, but there's an element of us defaulting to that basic nature when we fall into sin, where we lose control of ourselves, because that is instinctive. That is what we can do without planning. So that's why you watch porn, you are just amazed. Why am I responding to all these things, all these filthy things? You are responding because it appeals to your animalistic side. So all I'm saying is then that willpower is not that effective.
Right.
We believe after the fall,
Mm-hmm.
human condition changed. Man was never going to be able to resist sin on their own. They surrendered their mind to evil, and the only thing they could do without effort, with expertise, is to sin. So it doesn't take effort for me to fall down, spiraling down a road of destruction, because that's our default mode. So we need a higher power. I think that's where the Christians come in, to say there is a higher power that comes from the Spirit of God, that enables us to overcome sin. Yes, I did speak about the importance of accountability partner, the importance of porn blocks, the importance of all those things. It is because God, the same Spirit, is giving us an understanding of how the brain works. So we all that knowledge is from God. So God has enabled us to know that we need to do A, B, C, D in order to learn how to control behavior. That's why humans have been able to turn some wild animals into pets, because we have studied how
Their
to,
minds.
yes, we've studied how to bring positive reinforcement to animals. So there's an element of that as well, where we can, through what we do outside, being exposed to positive experiences, avoiding evil. And in the Christian framework, we don't do all those things alone. We do them being inspired by God's Spirit. So even in Christianity, we say it is God that works to that it is God that works in you both to will and to do good. I'm quoting Paul there. So it is God who works in us both to will, to bring the will, to even have the want to, the desire to do good, and not only the desire, but the ability to do it. So it is God that brings all that change about. But ours is to always be open to the Spirit, always be
I'm
open.
sorry to jump in there because
Yes.
you've actually triggered that verse that's found in Romans chapter 7, where Paul says, I want to do what is right, but I find myself doing what is not right. Then he says, whoa, who shall save me from this body of sin? Then he gets to Romans 8, verse 1. He then says, there is therefore no condemnation for those that are in Christ Jesus. And I'm just adding to what you just said.
Well, Christians have always argued about Paul. When was his struggle with sin? Was it before he converted, or was it after he converted? Because there are some people who have problems with people struggling with habits after they've converted. But my view is the Christian journey is a continuous path. Some of us may bring into this journey some habits that we, bad habits, unfortunately, that we have nurtured for years and years and years. And now, because we are now trying to follow Christ, that habit is like a nagging dog. Those small little dogs, I don't know whether they're called
What it
chihuahuas or
is.
whatever. Yes, I think what it is in Ndebele. I think they're called chihuahuas. You know, they are very aggressive, and they are always coming to your foot, pulling on your shoe. You are trying to move forward, but there's this little dog that is still pulling you back. So maybe Paul was experiencing a nagging habit that was still there, even when God's Spirit is transforming him. He says, the thought of doing good is there. I so much want to do. I know the good that I'm supposed to do. I know it, but I find myself doing exactly the opposite. So someone that gives a very good illustration of that is that if you have been brushing your teeth using your right hand for the longest time, since 5 years old, when your mom taught you to brush your teeth, and for one reason today you decide, I'm going to use my left hand to brush my teeth, how easy is it for you to do it, to change your hand? You know,
I can tell
yes.
you when I heard this example that you are just giving, I tried it. Ah, yeah.
It's so difficult
Yeah.
because in the morning before you've forgotten about your promise to not use your right hand, before
Yeah.
you know it, you're already brushing your teeth with your right hand. And just in that moment, you say, "Oh my God, I've just gone back to my default. I've just
Yeah.
gone back to my old way of doing things." But it's a process. It's a process. So even when you catch yourself going back to the right hand, you need to say in that moment, "Yes, I'm using my right hand. Let me stop now. Let me transfer the toothbrush to the left hand and start practicing using the left hand." The
Yeah.
more you practice using the left hand, you will find that the right hand becomes less dominant and the left hand becomes more natural to use. And
Yeah.
before you know it, it has become natural. So changing behaviors, changing thoughts, thought patterns is a continuous process. Yes, of course, broadly speaking, we're talking about the broad Christian journey
Yeah.
of conversion, but it also applies, I believe, in situations where someone has a nagging habit
Yeah.
that is still there because your previous reflex responses are still there. The
Yeah.
previous reflex responses of saying, if I'm stressed, I go to a website.
Yeah.
If I'm bored, I go to this. If I'm disappointed, I go to this thing to find comfort, to find soothing. So I
Yeah.
need to learn that no, there are healthier ways. There are more productive ways of dealing with issues than watching stuff,
Yeah.
which makes me guilty, feel a lot of shame, and feel depressed and low after I watch it. So there needs to be that shift and change of framing of the mind. But it's a process. It's not a
Yeah.
one day fit. Even Ellen White in the book Steps to Christ will assert to the same that we will often, I'm sorry, I wish I could quote it verbatim, but she has said that we will often go back to the foot of the cross
Yeah.
to cry to God
Yeah.
because of our sins and besetting habits. So it means one day you may go back to Christ to cry again to say, "No, I've messed up."
Yeah.
But like a journey of a child learning to walk from crawling, they will fall, they will stumble, and they will learn from each falling, each stumbling. But before they know it, they are walking. They are
Yeah.
walking. Some of us, we are now, we walk normally as adults,
Yeah.
but we know that even as adults, we sometimes fall.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
so it means in the broader analysis, we are
Yeah.
saying yes, over time you'll be able to stand on your 2 feet and walk and run, but sometimes because you didn't see a little pebble that is on the road, you trip on it
Yeah.
because the pebble was there and you didn't see it. So I think God is okay with that. So
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I need to sneak in is the issue of perfection, and I
Yeah.
know this is not a that's not the main subject. We struggle with what we think perfection means. When
Yeah.
Jesus says, Matthew 5:48, "Be ye perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect," the word there, the theologians tell that the word there means mature. "Be ye therefore mature as your heavenly Father is mature."
Yeah.
And to justify it, look at the previous verses before, "Be ye therefore perfect." Jesus says, previous verses before that one, he says, "Your Father in heaven, when he sends
Yeah.
the rain goes and falls to the on the evil as well as on the good.
Yeah.
He lets his sun rise for the good and as well as for the bad."
Yeah.
And then he goes to that verse, "Be ye therefore perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." So our Father in heaven is perfect in the way he loves
Yeah.
every member of his family. So maturity is coming to an understanding of who God is as a person who loves and allowing that love to be experienced by you on a personal level, having a mature understanding of God's character and extending the same grace that God is extended to you, to others. That's being mature. Being mature is being able to come to a point where if you are a mess, you admit that you are a mess. You need help. That's being mature. To say, oh God, search me thoroughly and know me and
No,
find
my,
if, yes, and find if there be any evil in me and lead me in your way everlasting. The psalmist was not afraid of God searching his heart thoroughly. Search my heart thoroughly. He wasn't.
Arthur, we have come to the end of the show, in keeping with time. And the next time we meet, we are going to continue from where we left off, because the one element that I would have loved us to touch on today was the issue of now studying the Bible concerning sexual purity. Because there's a tendency to say when one laps into whatever form of sin, the Bible becomes is put in the back burner. So when we do meet again, we will talk about the element of bringing in the Bible also as a tool to overcome, porn addiction. We will also look at fleeing, how to run away, and all those aspects. But I think for today, we have covered quite a number of things that are quite key and important. And we just want to say thank you very much, Arthur, for coming through to the Adventist World Radio and sharing such powerful insights. And to our listeners, please do make sure that you send us or engage with us on our WhatsApp line. That's +27 73 470 3520. Once again, Arthur, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I hope that your listeners will have a lovely day today. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, yeah.